Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Welcome to another Roswell show, and we have a man who's a legend in Roswell, Clifford Stone. Most people refer to you as Sergeant Clifford Stone, and you were retired. You served 20 years or what?
22 and a half years, sir.
In what?
In the United States Army, sir.
And we'll talk a little bit about your book, but before we get to that, it's a pleasure meeting you because I've read some of your stuff and a lot of people have talked about it, and now we're going to get to find out firsthand.
Thank you,
and
sir.
You told Dennis Balthaser, we were talking about subterranean bases, you say you have some plans, huh?
Oh, yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about that. How did you come about that?
Oh.
Or can you tell me?
Well, I have a whole lot of documentation.
Yeah, I know that. That's what I'm getting to.
I visit a lot of government sites, and I'm fortunate that a lot of the things that people don't even know where to go to look, I know where to look. So I have all kinds of information. If I start talking about Antimatter Drive, people say, oh, you saw Star Trek once too often. Yet we are actually working on antimatter drives, and people aren't aware of that. A lot of people aren't aware of the fact that there was feasibility studies on what they call advanced propulsion systems, and that was sponsored by the United States Air Force Research Laboratories. And they actually have a manual out about talking about traversing wormholes using antimatter drives. Warp speed.
Wow.
And there's even another feasibility study out that talks about teleportation and the feasibility of doing that. Now, they say it's not within the near future, but I would suggest that a lot of things that wasn't in the near future 20 years ago, they're here now. We look, the Air Force does studies saying, okay, where are we going to be, say, 50 years from now? They did one such study in 1945, and they missed out because a lot of things they said, which was really fantastic back then, we have surpassed. They did a study in 1995. Actually, they did two studies, Air Force 2025, which is where are we going to be 30 years down the road, and that was done in 95. And the other study was done by the Air Force Scientific Advisory Board, where are we going to be in the year 2045, 50 years down the road? Both those reports dealt with existing technologies and how we were going to exploit them. For example, can you imagine an aircraft taking off from an airfield, having no fuel on it, synthesizing that its fuel?
Manufacturing it as it goes.
Yes, sir. And if you get a puncture, don't worry about it. It will go ahead and heal itself. And these are things that we're actually working on today.
Yeah, well, I've heard terms like living metal and things like that, so that's probably along that line.
And, well, I believe, I don't believe mankind is not capable of doing things, thinking and coming up with ideas and thoughts and formulating those thoughts into the technologies that we have. But I do believe that some of the technologies got a kickstart because of things that we have recovered. If I was in California right now and I was sitting with some friends of mine, we'd be talking about, you know, as everyone should know it, of course, it would all be classified. We'd be talking about things like, gee, okay, we got this, but how did it get started? There had to be that vision. It's like we had a fantastic program, which I'm really enthusiastic about. We just released the CD with it. There's pictures of it, too, there. But it was called Project Dinosaur.
Tell me a little bit about that. You and I talked about that on the phone.
Project Dinosaur actually got its start in Germany during the war. They were working on a method of getting a rocket into space to come over here and say hello to us. They had some fireworks they wanted to deliver to us here in the 48 states that are adjacent. So they were working on this. Fortunately for us, the war ended before that happened. Fortunately for us, we got the plans and the technology that they had already developed, before our adversaries did. We very enthusiastically started to hit up on the program by 1954-55 time frame. We had technical reports on how we could do it. Money stopped us from doing it. But the first project that they were hitting up on was a lenticular or saucer-shaped craft that we were going to put out in space. It'd be out there for several weeks to several months, have a crew of 4 to 6 people. In the event of war, they could launch missiles or drop bombs from out in space, and no one could do anything to stop that. There's still not a whole lot that's been released on that particular program. It's known as the Langley Lenticular Lifting Vehicle. I'm still trying to get information, more information on it. The other one was like a wedge-shaped UFO. Or, I'm sorry, like a wedge shape. Now, the interesting thing about the wedge shape, there was a photograph taken in 1947 in Arizona that the FBI went to visit the man, talked to him about it. He took a CIC agent, who later became an OSI agent, CIC meaning Counterintelligence Corps, OSI, Office of Special Investigations, the equivalent of the FBI and the U.S. Air Force. The CIC person wanted the photographs with the original negatives. The gentleman in question went ahead and said, okay, I'll bring them over to the FBI headquarters tomorrow. When the FBI agent and the CIC agent left the gentleman's home, the CIC agent, or the FBI agent, turned to the CIC agent and says, hey, you know, he asked you if he's going to get those back. You didn't answer him. Is he going to get them back? The CIC agent said emphatically, probably not. This is a matter of national security. Those pictures never made it to Blue Book. They were taken to the Pentagon. They stayed there at the Pentagon until the gentleman asked for them back because he was going to release them and let True Magazine use them for an article. When he wrote to the Air Force saying, hey, you guys have my pictures, I was wondering, can I get them back? Ruppelt said, this guy's just trying to jump on the bandwagon. We have no report. We have no pictures. Well, a colonel from the Pentagon said, yeah, we do. They're in one of two classified files that we have here at Air Intelligence. By the way, Captain, you should go ahead and write a letter of apology for us not getting those back to him. And we believe them to be a hoax. He never did get his original prints back. Mm-hmm. He never did get his original negatives back. This is crucial. The negatives he could have taken in, had them test them, and really destroyed the Air Force's conclusion that they were hoax photographs. To this day, I do not believe them to be hoaxed. Also, the crash that occurred here, people are referring to it as being like a hill shape or wedge shape UFO that was recovered. What I'm suggesting here is that the early UFO reports sparked the imagination of many people that were involved in the air industry at the time, and they saw a technology there that could be utilized. And they went to work on it. That's why they were very enthusiastic about Dinosaur. What I'm pretty certain of is that some of the technology that may have been involved is technology that we exploited that came from someplace else. Now, the reason I state that, if I mention to you the U-2 plane, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Sure.
If I mention to you the SR-71... Mm-hmm. You know exactly what I'm talking about. If I go up and say Dinosaur, then you, oh yeah, I know about those. About 60 million years ago, they roamed the earth.
That's what I said to you on the phone. I didn't know they were in New Mexico.
And well, this is one of the states that has a lot of fossils.
Yeah,
from dinosaurs.
I know.
But the whole situation is that program was more viable than either one of the two programs that I just mentioned, the U-2 or the SR-71.
And they're both real.
And, of course, most people think, well, Dinosaur never flew. Oh, yes, it did. It went out in space, but it would not be until 1961 the first flight was be taken. December 12, 1963, they killed the program. Here again, lack of funds, and we had this silliness looming on the horizon we called the Vietnam War. So we went ahead and decided that we were going to go ahead, go to war, and put all our money in there and put all of our trust in the U-2 and the SR-71, which were very good aircraft. And they killed any more research on dinosaur, or so they say. I honestly believe that dinosaur lived on. And it's more sophisticated than anybody knows. And I honestly believe today dinosaur is still flying. And it can do very marvelous things.
Like, for instance, what? I mean, we're thinking about 48 people out in space, and we don't know about it.
Well, I'm
one thing.
Yes, sir. But I'm talking about in the near envelope of the Earth's atmosphere also. In the October 1973 war, I was told a story by an Egyptian colonel. If it's all right with you, I don't want to disclose where that was told. He knows where it was disclosed. He's heard the story.
Talking about your friend.
Yes, sir. But when Israel was about to collapse, when they were invaded October 6, 1973, by the elements of the Egyptian army and the Syrian army, they were about to collapse. The Air Force, that the Israelite Air Force could not go in, neutralized the tanks and the infantry that was on the ground, and that was thanks to the surface-to-air shoulder-fired missiles to take down the aircraft. He told me that they knew it was U.S. aircraft. About four of them showed up. Very weird-looking aircraft. Now, at the time, I was thinking F-111s with their wings back. And he said that they just started to do a loop, a circle in the air. They would fire their shoulder-fired missiles up at these planes. They would get up so high and that they'd just fall to the ground. Well, when they fall to the ground, you still expect them to explode. They didn't explode. This enabled the Israelite Air Force to neutralize the threat that was about to end the existence of Israel. The U.S. to this day denies that ever occurred. But I got it firsthand when I said, I think I know the aircraft. I was actually told, you know, you stay in your office and you don't bring it up no more. Do not bring the book in. Well, they shouldn't have been worried because at that time, the term, and this was, by the way, 1984.
Okay.
The term was still classified. Dinosaur was still classified. Somebody went ahead and thought it'd be cute to go ahead and put dinosaur on a T-shirt and a spacecraft there. And the United States government actually went and rounded up all those T-shirts because it was a name that no one was supposed to know. Now, remember, it was killed in 63.
Yeah,
yes,
no,
yes, sir.
Some years before.
So, and some of the documents on that CD that I gave you were just declassified this year, March 17th. And
Now the CD is available.
Oh, yes, sir.
And can you give me an example of some of those classified documents? What do they say? Backing up your story or what?
Oh, yeah, well, yes, sir, except for what happened there in Israel. One guy actually, I think, knew a little bit about it in one of the histories that was written because he was talking about how if we had dinosaur at the time of that attack, it would have made things so much easier for the Israelites. Well, I think we did have dinosaur at that time because we had no space-based assets and we weren't flying U-2s or SR-71s over the specific area of the Mediterranean where the Soviet Navy had taken up position to go in and reinforce Syria and Egypt and assist in the occupation of Israel. Every unit at that time, I remember it well because I was still in the military. As a matter of fact, I was sent greetings and salutations. I'd been a fun-loving civilian for 28 days. And now I find myself back in the uniform asking myself, what am I doing here? But I was back, and this was going on. And if you remember, we also had the a major flap, UFO flap, in October 73. But the big concern was what the Russians were going to do. And the reason we knew about it was...
The Russian threat was real at
yes,
that
sir.
Point, and we had a major UFO flap, or are you saying there was a connection there, or just a coincidence?
Well, I think there was a connection there. I think that our visitors are very interested in some of the things we do. We were on the brink at that time of total annihilation, because had we got into it with the Russians at that time, or the Soviet Union, it would have ultimately led to a nuclear exchange. And I am of the belief that Israel will not just let herself fall. She will destroy herself, and I mean with nuclear weapons. I believe Israel does have a nuclear weapons. They would use them. They will fall on their own sword before they will capitulate to any other nation.
And the extraterrestrial involvement is to stop it or watch it or monitor it or what?
This is our planet. They're going to let us do whatever we want to do. I firmly believe we are also a nation in, or a planet in quarantine.
You're a sergeant first class, right?
Yes, sir.
And retired.
Yes, sir.
And you obviously had a pretty high clearance because you've seen a lot of things.
Well, the interesting thing about the clearance is that I wanted to apply for a clearance because I felt I needed it in order for promotions. First attempt was there in Germany. And I had a SPO sergeant. That SPO is SPO, Security Plans and Operations. No. If you do that, they'll keep you quiet. And I was able to talk pretty much freely on UFOs at that time. It didn't get me in trouble until I got here.
Here in Roswell?
Yes, sir. And
How'd you get
involved? I almost got court-martialed. I was getting calls.
You were still in the service?
Yes, sir. And one thing I don't want to talk about is I was more involved in what I'm saying here.
Okay.
But there was a reason. I mean, I'm a 71 Lima, and they send me to Roswell, New Mexico, after requesting that I put in my request to go to the Sinai Desert to be on the multinational
desert,
force.
Right, kind
of. Yes, sir. But they call, no, you're going to Roswell. And I'm saying, what's at Roswell? And I'd been back in the States for about 2.5 years, 3 years. Normally you're ready to go overseas. Well, they were sending me to the New Mexico Military Institute.
Well, that's right down the street.
Yes, sir. And I was with the Military Science Department there. It wound up that when I got there, I was getting calls from various agencies dealing with UFOs. I even talked to some groups here, reference UFOs, and some of the powers that be did not like that. My life became a living nightmare, and I thought some of the folks that I dealt with had forgotten me. Well, they didn't. Ultimately, I wound up, I got relieved of duty. I was isolated, essentially not being able to do anything, put into a room where I stayed except to go get lunch. But then I was exonerated, and after being relieved of duty, getting an adverse EER, one of the highest peacetime awards you can get for service, I was awarded that, the Meritorious Service Medal.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I have the distinction of being the only service member, living or dead, that got a medal for service during a time he was relieved for duty and got an adverse EER.
Yeah, that's hard to believe, but at the same time, things like that happen.
Oh, yes, sir. The other thing was hard to believe. Here it was. I was going to Germany. The family was here, and I needed to take a leave, and I requested a 30-day leave so I could move my family actually back to Mississippi. We had a home there. And
by Fort Jackson someplace?
Keesler Air Force Base.
Okay, okay.
I had some interesting assignments. But I went ahead and I said, well, I need to get my family back there. And, well, no, you can't do that. And they held me and held me and held me. 3 days before I was to go to Germany, I was given leave. Didn't give me no time to do anything. So we're buying the house where we're at right now here. So we stayed there. I went to Germany. When I went to Germany, I got a letter from 4th ROTC region granting me the 30 days leave. Like, what am I going to do about it now? also where my assignment was supposed to be. It didn't turn out to be where I was supposed to be going. And I found that I was going to be back involved with the non-existent issue of UFOs. So the people who really control that, whether you're military or the alphabet soup of the military intelligence, no one knows who that small nucleus is that controls it. So I figured if I put in my request for retirement, I will be able to go ahead, retire, and they won't be any the wiser. So I went ahead after being there for about six months in Germany, and we started to have things happening in Belgium. We had things going on in the...
talking about in the UFO world.
Yes, sir.
You're right.
In the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union lost a fighter, MiG-27. In the summer. We were able to keep that quiet for 72 hours and it never broke over here. Things got really hot for the pilot. He bailed out. Then the plane regained power and it crashed in Belgium. But UFOs, along with their occupants, was being seen in Russia even. And we were actually...
When you say their occupants, what were you talking about there?
Well, there were several different types of occupants.
Okay.
You had your classical grays. You had some that looked like inflated balloons, like you might say, about 10 foot tall, that would just float. It didn't look like they were walking or anything like that, but they would float, and they would go up over fences, things of this sort, the whole school saw them. Their military was concerned about some of the things. As a matter of fact, there was a recent release of a CIA document that makes reference to a pilot being killed in 1989. There were other things that have happened, and I think those documents have come out where the CIA was making reference to them also, where the military officials of the Soviet Union was alluding to, yes, we have our own problems with UFOs. And the one thing that I didn't want to be involved with was being in Germany for 4 years and the family not being there. So I said I was going to take leave, went in, put in my retirement, didn't utter a word to the powers that be on the other side of the fence. October 30th, I took leave, October 30th, 1989. Came back November 30th, I was to report to Fort Bliss to out-process and complete my retirement. I got to Fort Bliss, and they attached me for 60 days pending approval of my retirement. The only problem was the retirement had already been approved. They had to revoke those orders, which you're not supposed to do that unless it's in time of war or you're on a by-name listing that says, we need you and you're staying. It'd be very, very difficult to state that they needed me to be in a 71 Lima. Of course, there were other things that I was doing, and they were short of people. What I was doing along in the UFO field at that time, and I'll say reluctantly because it was, they went ahead and thought they were going to keep me, but I went ahead, and if they called my bluff, I would have still been in the Army for about another 10
you
years.
You don't want to tell me what that reluctant job was? Okay. Now I'll let you off
the hook. It ties in. It gets me in trouble when I talk about it a lot.
Well, I don't want to get you in a lot of trouble on the first
show. I'll tell you something else. When you deal with it up close and personal, it really isolates you. And the only reason I started to talk about it was I had a personal tragedy that occurred, and I felt that my family needed to know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I told them first. Then I told some other people, and some other people told other people. And you get to the point where, gee, if I could just go back and deny this. But you can't, because to deny it, you're denying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it. I know what I went through. I lived it. And I actually started to check, gee, can you prove any of this? And I have a CD at home called Stoney's File, where I try to piece some things together. And there's circumstantial evidence in several military publications my conviction that UFOs are real. They were put, but they were put out there for a purpose because we knew something was going to happen in Europe. They were put out in October, November of 1980. And you might recall what happened at Rendlesham Field in December of 1980. There's still more to that story that needs to be told.
Tell our audience a little bit, because a lot of people don't.
Over the course of several nights, between the 26th and the 29th, at Rendlesham Field there in England.
We've done shows on it, but a lot of
there were UFO sightings that was taking place. There are allegations that there were landings and that there were entities that got out of these craft once they landed. Military personnel were involved. The military personnel saw these entities. Most are reluctant to talk. Some are coming out talking, which is a good thing. Some people are stopping short, and I understand why, that have knowledge that the entities were there in high places, who are coming out and talking, well, yeah, we saw these and nothing really ever happened to me. The military didn't come after me or anything like that. And as long as you don't talk about seeing the entities, they're not going to come after you. You just saw lights. You saw lights in the forest. But now people are becoming more and more brazen. They're coming out and stating that they saw a structured craft. And we're not talking just the privates and the sergeants, but yeah, we have officers that are coming out.
I think there was either a lieutenant colonel or a colonel.
Lieutenant colonel.
Right. Was involved in that.
Yes, sir.
That's about as high as a field grade officer should get. So.
Well, he went on to make colonel.
Yes, so he it didn't hurt his reputation. Or we don't know. He may have made general otherwise.
But he's coming out and he's talking more. But what I'd like to see is for more, what I'd like to see is the documentation that I know is there come out. When we become.
We got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about that. Sergeant Clifford Stone is our guest, and we'll talk about the DVDs and his book and a few other things. As you can tell, it's a very interesting hour. Don't go away. This is Jerry Pippin. We're in Roswell.
The doors are finally open at ShopJerryPippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features three different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at ShopJerryPippin.com.
We are broadcasting from the Earth Station Roswell Visitor Center. Sergeant Clifford Stone, the E, Clifford E. Stone. What's the E stand for?
Earl.
Okay, Earl. Well, you said you knew where to look sometimes. In other words, your experience, and we're talking about documentation.
Yes, sir.
And documents, period. I got from that, and maybe I'm putting your words in your mouth or something, but I got from that, if you knew where they were and you asked properly or showed up and said, let me see it, usually they'd let you do it.
They would usually let me do it. As a matter of fact, in Dinosaur, I got to see the documents before they were declassified. And I'm sitting back looking at them and seeing that they're still stamped with their classification. And I'm saying, well, where's the stamp that says that these have been declassified under FOIA?
And it's not there yet.
And, it's not there. It's not been declassified yet. I said, so if somebody sees me with these, I just simply tell them to call you. And no, you're going to go to jail because they're not declassified. And I said, okay, what do I need to do to get them declassified? Well, eventually they were declassified, put up on site. Some of the stuff I was trying to get from Wright-Patterson, they made it very difficult because my computer would keep going down. And even though it had the program in there to open the files, it wouldn't open them. And a friend of mine in California, he went ahead and emailed them to me. So I got them, but I still had to crack the nut on how we go ahead and get these files from there. Well, it's supposed to be QuickTime files. I got QuickTime. Everybody, I think, has got QuickTime. I even went ahead and bought the Pro 7, but it would not open those files. So I thought, okay, I know what to do. So I went ahead, got back on there, clicked on it to save to my desktop, saved it to my desktop. It went through one of the Microsoft programs, appeared on my desktop. Then I just clicked it, create a PDF file, so I created the file. And that was some very interesting reading. But it also tied into the other stuff I saw, so I went through DTAC and got the rest of the information that they'd let me have. And I'm still pushing to try to get some more information. Also, NASA had some information on it, but I also found out I started off with Mach 27. And there's indications that these craft actually attain that speed.
Now, that's pretty fast.
Yes, sir. Also, if you'll note when you see the pictures, there is no heat shield on these craft. And they were going out in space. They were carried into space. They were what they called a boost glider type craft. They would actually circumvent the globe three times, then start re-entry in the Earth's atmosphere, which they could go around several more times, taking fantastic pictures, skipping the Earth's atmosphere, which means in 55-56 time frame, had we funded the program to do it, we would have had the first man in space. And it wouldn't just be a little ball sending back a beeping noise. But we chose not to do that. It wasn't until we got concerned with Sputnik that we decided, you know, we better get out there too. We were working on it, but it was still something that was considered, we can put it on the back burner. It didn't get its boost till after the Russians put Sputnik up.
Now, when we talk about Wright-Patterson, anything going on there now?
At Wright-Patterson?
Yeah.
I think so, yes, sir.
You do?
I definitely believe.
I mean, there's all kinds of stories about what's happened in the past, and probably most of it's true, I think.
Oh, yes, sir.
And so, their big story these days is, well, we moved all that stuff out of there in the 80s. They probably didn't.
Let me give you an example. When UFOs first started, when we first started to investigate UFOs, and the public knew we were doing it, but didn't know what, because it was supposed to be secret. It was above secret. Army CIC was doing it. Once again, CIC's Counterintelligence Corps.
Yeah, right.
They gathered files. They kept the most...
I had a discussion with a guy of Air Force OIC, and I said, well, I think the Army really was doing a lot more than everybody thinks, and he agreed with me. I think the Army was kind of hidden here, but they were right in the middle of it.
Well,
probably leading.
Well, we had the file on what happened here at Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what a lot of people don't know, do you know the Roswell file actually showed up in the Blue Book files and was there for a longest period of time?
Oh, really?
But people don't go back and read that stuff, the files. As a matter of fact, some of the files even got lost, even got destroyed, because after the Project Sign report came out, we were not going to investigate UFOs anymore. Something happened here in New Mexico that actually caused Grudge to come into existence.
What was that?
The green fireball phenomenon.
Okay. Now, I remember the green fireball story. They were,
yes, sir.
They still hear about it.
Sometimes. Oh, yes, sir. And they are still
What's
just as mysterious.
On that?
Project Twinkle was inconclusive.
Okay.
La Paz went to his death stating these were manufactured devices.
By us, probably.
Well.
Or somebody.
The technology we didn't have at that time.
Okay.
But now remember, Project Sign said, page 7 and 8, I think it is, on Project Sign, it stated, we look very closely at the possibility of these things being interplanetary spacecraft. We have a report done by Dr. Lipp of the RAM Corporation that says the least probability of the explanation of unidentified flying objects is interplanetary spacecraft. We will not in the future entertain or accept them as interplanetary spacecraft. You will not go that route. From that time on, they didn't. From that time on, if you worked in the aerial phenomena branch, there at Wright-Patterson. It was a dead-end street. You were on your way out of the service. I don't know anybody that made a promotion or went further into their careers after they became head of Blue Book, Grudge, Sign, forget it, because during the period of Sign, the whole reason for doing that and making it clear in that report that you won't even consider Interplanetary as an explanation was the, everyone calls it the top secret estimate of the situation. It was actually what we call a situation estimate. I've only seen one that's ever been released. But the situation UFOs, the estimate, they were interplanetary. Well, the Air Force went ahead and devised a system called bait and switch. You tell me what you saw. I will go ahead and put the other pieces in there, because what you're telling me what you saw may have been a structured craft, circular, and you were 15 feet away from it. Now, I'm going to put the pieces in there where you were suffering from war hysteria. You saw a helicopter land maybe 30 feet away from you, and your imagination took over. Now, why am I doing that? Not because I don't believe you, but I'm under orders to reduce the number of unknowns. During the time of Project Sign, 35% of the UFOs reported were unknown. They were reported by reliable, trained observers. By that being the case, it was very difficult to look these people in the eye and say, well, you know, that can't be. You're telling me a fantastic story. Well, that's how Hynek got it. Fantastic, that he was hearing fantastic stories being told, or how was it? Fantastic stories being told by highly credible people. It couldn't be ignored. He even had a frustration with the Air Force. In Bismarck, what is it, South Dakota?
Mm-hmm.
Bismarck, South Dakota, August 6, 1953. UFOs are being picked up by the ground observers, being picked up on radar, and the decision is made, send fighters up. Find out what these things are. Fighters went up. The UFOs took evasive action to avoid the fighters. The fighters saw them, would try to close in on them. They'd let them get close, then they'd take off. Even with the fighters hitting the afterburners, the fighters couldn't get close to them. 200 miles away, they started to see the same thing, only the evasive action wasn't being taken. Probably because no fighters were sent up that time. I mean, if you can't do it, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Why burn the fuel?
Mm-hmm.
So they went ahead and hit up on this. Hynek was scared to death in his report that he wrote for him. He says, you know, we give credence to this air of mystery in the in our investigation of UFOs. Take, for example, the Bismarck, South Dakota case, in which for 6 hours we had objects being seen, fighters going up to try to intercept them, being picked up on radar. And we cannot explain it. When some UFO researcher gets a hold of that, then we're going to be hard-pressed to explain what happened there. So he made it clear we need to go back and check these cases that are a year, 2 years, 3 years old, and try to explain them. Well, we did. And it wasn't important that the explanation be right. Just get it off the books as as an unknown. What you wanted to do was reduce your number of unknowns. So he couldn't understand why no one took a picture, why they didn't send somebody out there to investigate, trained scientists who would have known what they were looking at. And, you know, this didn't make any sense to him. And also, he alluded to, you know, this could give the enemy the upper hand. In other words, the enemy could start bombing us, and all you have to do is go ahead, have some fifth columnists say, hey, I saw a UFO last night, get the adrenaline rushing, have another people start misidentifying stars, things of this sort, cause hysteria, bomb. Well, the bombing and all this would be taking place. You would not even anticipate that it's the Soviets or say, we're not doing that. But what happens? Everybody thinks E.T.'s attacking. So after 2 or 3 days of this, well, you have a problem. And, you know, the morale is shot. No one has confidence in their military. And you've lost the war before it even begun. He actually put that in his assessment.
It's in there.
Now, what do you do about that case, which it took evasive action, picked up on radar, was being seen by many people? Well, you go ahead and you say that there was malfunction in the radars and that what people were seeing were temperature inversions. Now, I'm willing to accept that the day that somebody comes in and scientifically shows me that temperature inversions will take evasive action from fighter aircraft.
Good point. Sergeant Stone, we'll be right back and wrap this up. We're almost out of time. I want to ask you about this other CD that you have out. Don't go away.
I'm Jim Mars, author of Alien Agenda, the world's top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs. I'm here today to tell you one of the most fascinating stories I've come across in my career as a journalist. The secret of Reggate is that so many people in one small American community now know that there is so much more to the universe than what we see and experience in our everyday world.
Save $5 this month when you purchase The Secret of Reggate DVD from ShopJerryPippin.com. This film won the prestigious People's Choice Awards at the 2004 UFO Conference. The Secret of Reggate will astound you. You will want to see it again and again. Save $5. Order it now, this month only, at ShopJerryPippin.com. Secret of Reggate, a Linda Cowan production. We're in Roswell, and we're talking to Clifford Stone, who became a resident of Roswell through government obfuscation, I guess. They wouldn't let you move. Welcome back. Let's talk about this other CD you have.
Well, I have a...
You have another one. It's just released.
I have four.
Yeah, all together.
Yes, sir. The other one...
You have another new one first.
Yes, sir. That one is the... New Mexico and UFOs, the early years, 1947 to 1952. You find out a whole lot about the green fireball phenomena. Also, you find out that the only state in the Union during the tenure of Project Blue Book that had its own Blue Book file was New Mexico.
Really?
Yes, sir.
A state operation.
Well, a file within the Blue Book files, mm-hmm. just marked New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was telling you earlier, I actually believe that the death throbs would have been felt with the conclusions of Project Sign in February of 1949, in which the Air Force would have gladly have gotten out of the UFO business. And if you reported UFOs, if you feel threatened, notify your local law enforcement agency. We don't investigate UFOs anymore. Had it not been for Dr. Lincoln LaPaz seeing his green fireball and being an expert in the field, knew that that was something that was manufactured and exhibiting technology that was above and beyond anything that we had. Being concerned that it could be some type of espionage device directed against the security of the United States, he brought it to the attention of the military. The military was having their own problems with it, too.
All through this discussion we've had with you, it seems to me that the overriding concern was the security of the United States and the Cold War.
Yes, sir.
If all of these things, the UFO sightings, and all this had happened in a different climate, we might have a different outcome as far as disclosure.
Actually, we don't know that. Now, the reason I state that, there was a workshop that NASA had in the year 2000. Everybody quotes the Brookings Institute as to what they had to say. Well, in the year 2000, the Astrophysiology Department of NASA had a workshop. One of the concerns that they had was to let people know we're not alone in the universe when we have that first contact. They also, because of the entering into the advanced propulsion systems now and recognizing the fact that we may someday be able to visit other solar systems outside of our own, they may be able to come here. And the big concern is what world reaction would be. They believe religion is resilient enough that it would survive. There would not be a problem there. But once again, there would be many questions that would be brought up about the scientific community. It would be day one of school all over for most of the scientific community.
So in other words, you're saying we talk about the religious implications.
Yes, sir.
But you're saying the scientific implications were probably just as overriding because these were scientists and they were trying to cover their own...
Correct, sir. The other thing that's interesting about that report is that it makes it clear the clock is ticking. The day is approaching that we're going to have open contact. And the question is, how do you tell a world society? You and I might be able to accept extraterrestrial visitors, life out there in the cosmos, but there's a whole lot of people that aren't. They are concerned about the people who will take their lives, and there will be turmoil, particularly if that life shows up here, because most people fear the unknown, and they're going to perceive it as a threat. And I'd like to say...
That's always been one of the... I didn't mean to interrupt, and I'll let you say what you're going to say, but that's always been one of the concerns I've had. If the ETs wanted to make a friendly visit, we'd probably misread it. We'd think they were attacking us or something.
Well, from the military viewpoint, we would definitely want to go ahead and acquire the technology. But, you know, most of us see them as cartoon characters. We don't stop to think. They have societies like us. They have loves, they have likes, they have dislikes. They even have disagreements. But they're explorers. They're not warriors. Can they defend themselves? Oh, they could reduce us to a burned out cinder. But that's not what they're about. Someday we're going to be space travelers too. But the only way that's going to happen is for us to leave our warlike ways here on this planet and start exploring the cosmos with the enthusiasm and the zeal of a child. We want to get out there and find out things about our universe for the knowledge, not for the destruction and detriment of the human species.
In your research and your military life and after your military life, have you seen evidence of contact?
Oh, yes, sir.
Has it always been friendly?
There have been some instances in which we would go ahead and identify some of it as being hostile, but we were always the aggressors.
Right. That's when we tried to shoot them down and they would...
One story I'd like to tell you about, but I get too emotional when I do it, but the reason... See, when you're telling the story, you see it, and you see it. You're reliving it inside of you. You're reliving it.
Yeah, well, I'd like to hear it if you could do it. I don't want to put you through a lot, but
well, there was one case where, and I've told this one before, but we were entertaining one. He was supposed to be our guest. He was our prisoner. We don't keep him. They get him back as soon as there's a crash, just like we do. There's an effort to try to recover him. But I was gifted or cursed with this situation that I was sensitive to things. So I was used what they call interfacing a lot. And it's pretty much like you and I talking. As a matter of fact, I would try to talk because I wasn't used to conversing that way. But with the ETs, you would go ahead and you would feel what they were feeling.
And so not only did you hear a voice in your head, you felt their emotion.
Everything. They felt what you felt, and particularly when you got a companion. That was a person that pretty much follows you through life. And what that's all about, I don't know to this day, but I know it happens. Anyhow, we had this one room, and... they had this entity in there, and I was supposed to go in and get what I could.
I know this is painful. I apologize.
But I went in, and it looked up at me, and exact words, "I am afraid." And I felt what it was feeling. And trying to get it out a little further, you know, think of you being billions of miles from home, not knowing if you're going to see your family again, your loved ones, or your own world. And we helped it get away.
You're the people there.
Well,
not officially.
Me and another Spec 5.
Yeah, okay.
But it almost didn't happen. But
so you helped it escape.
Yes.
And what kind of ET was this?
This one was like an ash gray, and it was about 4.5-5 foot tall.
Had it been involved in a crash or something?
I didn't have a need to know that, but I believe that's what happened.
And probably had lost other companions.
And, well, he said that his people was coming to get him.
Okay.
But there was a problem. In order to get him where we were at, they would have to take life, and they wasn't going to do that. So we knew we had to get him outside. If we got him outside, no one would be hurt.
And so you took him out of the compound?
We took him more than just out of the compound. It had barbed wire around the compound. And we went ahead and cut the wire. Oryk didn't know what was going on. But he got to see it. There was other people that I served with that knew there was something strange about me, that I wasn't just the atypical 71 Lima. I had happened to work in this office or that office.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple places where I was supposed to be the NCO. Well, at one time I was supposed to have been the NCOIC of Army Community Services at Fort Bliss. I was never the NCOIC of Army Community Services at Fort Bliss. I can produce the orders that says I was, but yes. I was never that.
Far from that.
Oh, yes, sir.
And this being, did it thank you?
We had an understanding.
Okay.
If you have a family,
you could identify.
You could identify with what was going on there.
I think that's a good point to end the show. We'll talk to you again.